The following is an interview recorded about Astronomy Picture of the Day. It was initially broadcast as part of the November Jodcast. To hear the entire Jodcast, please go to www.jodcast.net.
Robert Nemirov, welcome to the Jodcast.
Thanks for inviting me on. Happy to be here. Well, not here. You're still on the phone, but virtually here.
Now, you're an astronomer at the Michigan Technological University and also NASA Goddard.
Well, actually, I spend my time not at NASA Goddard anymore. I still have a web address there, but I think that email is forwarded to me at Michigan Technological University, known as Michigan Tech to people around here, which is pretty much in the northern U.S., pretty much in the middle of North America.
You work with another astronomer, Jerry Bunnell, on a website called Astronomy Picture of the Day. Can you tell us a bit about how it got started?
I do. Yes. Jerry and I are still quite proud of this. Astronomy Picture of the Day, I know, was born in 1995 when I was at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center and shared an office with Jerry Bunnell. So we've had some fanciful conversations at many times about many different things, all the way from is the universe encyclopedia encoded in the digit pi, to what is this World Wide Web going to do? Is this going to be useful? And how come NASA higher-ups don't seem to, you know, appreciate the power of the web? One day we were brainstorming ways to use the web and came up with lots of ideas that had nothing to do with astronomy and a couple ideas that had something to do with astronomy and just decided to try this Astronomy Picture of the Day idea.
So this was pretty much an idea you're kicking around with Jerry Bunnell. It's just a way pretty much to use this fantastic new internet thing.
Yeah, there was the World Wide Web, which we then knew as, I didn't know there was a difference between Mosaic, which was an early browser, and the web. So I would keep referring to the web as Mosaic. But it was really cool. And we would be sent pictures by email sometimes by people saying, have you seen this? This is a Hubble picture or another picture. And many of the pictures we were getting were not, described. You sort of had to know. Sometimes we would know, like, oh, I know what that is because, we're an astronomer. That's an open cluster. I know that. But we were wondering, for one thing, how many people were getting these email attachments with no description. So we figured, there's not so many of them. We could probably do one a day and write at least a description that someone who's not an astronomer could get an understanding. So it was a way sort of to help make the astronomy part of the web better explained instead of just, oh, wow, that looks cool. What is that kind of thing?
That's the big thing about APOD, isn't it? I mean, that's certainly which I feel is a very important part of the Astronomy Picture of the Day is those explanations that you give. It's not just the pretty picture. It's not just the wonderful colors or the exciting rocket taking off. It is the description down the bottom underneath the picture saying, this is what you're looking at. This is what it means. And here are some links so you can go and learn more about it. It makes it such a wonderful resource. How much effort do you put into researching the background of each image? Or do you have a... Does it come together pretty easily?
Some come together more easily than others. Jerry and I work in parallel. We rarely work together on them. I do some each week, and he does some each week, and we each sort of know what the other is thinking. I sort of think of it myself as building an APOD. Usually I'll start with an image, and then I'll build the text from the image. Every now and then, it's the other way around. Something really cool is going on in astronomy, and I go out searching for an image, and I found that's the hard way to do things. Sometimes I happen to have worked in that area or something, and so it doesn't take me as long to understanding the background and explaining the background as it would have in other areas where I don't really know so much.
So what's your area of astronomy?
Well, I worked in gravitational lensing. My PhD was in gravitational lensing, deflection of light by stars and stuff out in the universe, and that codes the universe in a way, and you can help figure out what's in the universe by looking at it. So I still do an occasional paper every now and then on having something to do with gravitational lensing. And I became interested, I've worked in several different areas, became interested in gamma ray bursts, huge flashes of gamma radiation that just come and go in seconds in some random part of the sky, totally dominate the gamma ray sky for, a few seconds maybe. And for a long time, people didn't know, have any idea even the distance scale to them. That's actually when I was working with Jerry Bunnell. We both worked together at that NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. And we were actually in the middle of a huge debate as to whether gamma ray bursts were at cosmological distances, which actually Jerry and I both believed. as did the rest of our group, or whether they were somehow in our galaxy or at the edge of our galaxy, which a significant group of people believed. And we were continually trying to come up with ways of finding out what they were, first of all, because we were just trying to investigate it, and also, since we were pretty much in the cosmology camp, ways that would show they were unambiguously cosmological. And, of course, whenever we would come up with something, it would be hotly debated, and galactic people, as we called them, would come up with something else. And it was an exciting time, but it was a frustrating time. We have quite a few papers together on gamma ray bursts, and it is during one of the summers of researching gamma ray bursts at NASA Goddard that the Astronomy Picture of the Day sort of came out. At NASA Goddard, we had a great internet connection, equivalent to extremely broadband, which was very unusual in 1995. We had no problems bringing in big images and sending out big images. And so we had these computers that had instant internet web connection, and so we considered ourselves lucky with a resource and, you know, sort of felt challenged to use it.
That sounds like a brilliant start to the APOD career, with all the best gear and in the best place. So you get your ideas from the current research which is going on, and also the research that you're particularly interested in. Do you get ideas from other people? Do they send you, hey, look, here's a picture at Tritalk. I think it's pretty cool. Can you put it on APOD?
Yes, we get a lot of those, more and more as the years go by. I'm first of all, on an emailing list, several emailing lists for astronomy news stories. So the American Astronomical Society, as well as the Royal Astronomical Society, maintains an email list of journalists. And when people do research that they think is newsworthy, they will many times through their university to that nexus, either the American Astronomical Society press person or the Royal Astronomical Society press person or Europe or whatever, if judged worthy by that press officer, will then be broadcast out to a large email list. So I'm on those email lists, so I can see the astronomy email stories, what different places is considered important as they come by. Many of them have links to images, and so I will look at that. I mean, I've been an astronomer for 20 years now, so I've seen a lot of things come and go, and I haven't as sort of a guess as to what's relatively important and what's not, which is pretty good to have. And I look at the images and see if it's a fuzzy blob. And it's sort of a combination of how good is the image and how important is the story that make things up. I also get a lot of email from places that want their images posted. We reject maybe 10 to 1 at this point, maybe even more than that. For each image you see on APOD, we have been sent maybe 9 others that some of them were pretty good, but it's a bit of a competition at this point. They just didn't win for that day. Sometimes we'll have, you know, a lot of really good ones, and we'll just queue them up into the future. But we try to be a bit of a news source, too. So if things get too old, it's going to hurt them. If something is just happening tomorrow, like, for instance, the Orionid meteor shower was pretty good, and we got sent an image, you know, a few hours and a lot of, like, 12 good Orion meteors right on it. And so we queued it up for the very next day. I happened to do that one. On Monday of this week, this is being recorded on October 26th, we had a great image from, you know, a day and a half before, whereas sometimes we will run things, you know, delayed a week, maybe 2 weeks, and some are just classic images of things that are really cool to see, like the Eagle Nebula. If we get another good image of the Eagle Nebula and it hasn't run recently, we might run that.
You also cover a lot of different areas of astronomy, and you also cover different parts of the spectrum as well. Do you try to keep a balance?
We do. Another thing that we try to do is if we haven't run something, a specific topic for a while, we'd be particularly keen to run something if it comes our way. We won't go too far out of our way. If there's just nothing in an area, then that area will be relatively dry. But we do try to keep a balance. One of the things that I keep in my head is that we're trying to make this useful for people taking introductory astronomy. We'd like to try to cover pretty much everything you might see in an introductory astronomy book. And that's one of the things I use to see is this relevant for APOD or not, is would this appear in the next edition of a good astronomy textbook or not. Now, sometimes we go and do one that's out of that range, but I try anyway to stick in that range. I'm teaching astronomy this semester, and I know what images I need, and that helps feed back into what kind of images I choose.
Now, we know that you've published a book in the past of the best of the APOD images. It was in 2003, and it was called The Universe, 365 Days. You've now put together another book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the book is called Astronomy 365 Days, and it's with Jerry. Jerry and I do a lot of things together. We get along quite well. We're good friends, and this one actually has Jerry as the first author. It's Jerry T. Bunnell and Robert J. Nemeroff are the authors in the order. And the first one, I was the first author. And if we survive to do a third one, I might be the first author again. But this is Bunnell and Nemeroff, Astronomy 365 Days. The two books are exclusive of each other. This is the latest book, Astronomy 365 Days, has the images, all new images, none of which appeared in Universe 365 Days. So I guess it's a reason to buy both books, or buy multiple books.
Christmas is coming. It's important to get the boutique items
for the astronomer in your life.
Yes, most people don't understand that you can replace the foundation of your house by stacking these books up, and they're really quite sturdy. Actually, we were trying to do a book for a little while. We approached, I remember, at meetings in the American Astronomical Society, the Cambridge University Press would have a booth, and I would frequently speak with Cambridge University Press, and they just weren't so interested in doing one. And because I would consider Cambridge to be probably the most prestigious astronomy publisher. But another publisher came along and made an offer to us out of the blue, and I hadn't heard of them. It's Abrams. So Jerry and I spoke about it, and even though it wasn't Cambridge University Press, we went with it. And they've been quite professional, I have to say. They've done a good job with the book, so we are happy with them.
Well, did Cambridge University Press give you any reason why they didn't want to publish your book?
They said, first of all, it's expensive to publish picture books. To do high-quality pictures takes a lot more money to do as opposed to just words. Also, they pointed out that these pictures are freely available on the World Wide Web.
And
so convinced that people wouldn't want to pay for them. But the quality of the images in the book are higher, much higher, than you find on the web. And it's a convenient thing to carry around. I mean, water comes out of the top tap, but people buy water anyway. Also, the particular company that Abrams that got us to do the book, they specialize in imagery and photography and art. So they had a good pipeline for getting that stuff done.
Does the book also have explanations for each image as well?
Yes, it's the same explanations except grammatically correct, because they had an editor, go through and actually make these sentences into English, or at least American English.
Well, it sounds like this great sort of thing to have on a coffee table to flip through.
Yeah, I want a coffee. This is my Christmas list. Have you got a favorite APOD image? Either the best of the best, the one which you use... I think it's better than all the rest.
I don't think I have one favorite. What happens, though, if you want to find out which ones I like, we rerun what we call best ofs on the weekends. So if you were to type in certain, you know, the names of certain images in our search engine, you'll see some images have occurred multiple times. We don't rerun an image within the same year. It has to be at least a year separated before we run it. But some of the really good images, you know, like the big pillars of M42, they're a very famous picture. Other ones just escape my mind. Oh, the looking back on the eclipsed Earth. Actually, that was originally the best image was taken from the Mir space station. These things keep coming up because when we rerun the best ones on the weekend, it just comes, you know, let's rerun the best images and give them and update the links on the explanation so it's fresh. And sometimes even update the explanation a little bit if more is known about that particular image. So to find out the favorite ones that I have and even Jerry has, you just look for ones that are frequently repeated on the weekends. So one of the reasons why we run reruns on the weekends is to reduce the workload. But also another reason is because the best images would just totally fall out of modern consciousness if they're never rerun. So there are two reasons.
Is it a very demanding schedule to come up with a new APOD every day?
It takes me about an hour to write the text, maybe a little bit less, maybe an hour to link it and to put it into the queue. So it might take about 2 hours for me to build an APOD from scratch. And so I usually do, you know, 3 or 4 a week. If I do 4 a week, we're talking about, you know, what, 8 hours a week. Plus, I do get a lot of email, so maybe 8 to 10 hours a week. So I can still have a, you know, a teaching career, a research career, and do this.
And a life.
Yeah.
Along with everything else.
Yeah. I did go home once. I didn't recognize any of the people there, so I came back to work. I do have a life.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us in the Jodcast about Astronomy Picture of the Day. It's an absolutely fantastic resource, and I've enjoyed looking at these images ever since I became aware of them many years ago. Just to plug the book again, it's Jerry Bunnell and Rob Nemiroff, Astronomy 365 Days, at all good bookshops now, or Amazon, in whatever part of the world you're in. Rob Nemiroff, thank you very much for joining us and talking to us about APOD.
Thanks again for having me on. It's been a hoot.